evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Former President Donald Trump was rushed off the stage at a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, after apparent gunshots rang out.
Former President Donald Trump survives an attempt on his life at a campaign rally.
Been quite a difficult journey, but finally we have finalized that and we have had a good achievement.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame wraps up his re-election campaign Saturday.
For him to manage the affairs of this country to guarantee peace, and also for him to be able to draw lessons on how certain things can be handled to have a different, outcome.
And Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema promises to reach out to his predecessor for peace talks to help ease political tensions in the country. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Former President Donald Trump survived an attempt on his life at a campaign rally on Saturday evening. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman reports from Washington on the deadly shooting in Pennsylvania.
Former President Donald Trump was rushed off the stage at a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, after apparent gunshots rang out. The presumptive Republican Party presidential nominee was displaying a chart of border crossing numbers when loud noises were heard. Trump was seen reaching with his right hand toward his neck. He raised his fist before Secret Service agents escorted him from the stage. Photographs taken by the AP's Evan Vucci showed blood on Trump's face. His motorcade quickly left the venue and the crowd calmly dispersed. Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah, in a social media posting, said, "Someone just tried to kill President Trump. Pray for him and for swift justice." Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
For reaction from Africa following the assassination attempt, we begin with Kenya. You'll first hear two opinions from Mombasa. First, from resident James Mandinyu, followed by community leader Hamisa Zaja.
It's unfortunate in a country that has grown so much in terms of democracy. It's a beacon to many African, European, Asian countries. It's so unfortunate that in this modern era, such an incident can happen. It's unbelievable, and I want to condemn it, and the whole world should condemn such acts. These are vices that should not be tolerated by any modern democracy. So it's unfortunate going into these elections that, it's going to spark reactions in the USA. And, politics of the USA are based on accountability, responsibility, and what have you. So it's unfortunate.
We are feeling very sorry. Two, it actually means that there are a lot of unsolved issue. We should tell them that as a superpower country, they should start solving issues. You see, before it becomes a conflict, that means there were some unsolved issues in between that are brewing to conflicts, and these are the results. We talk of insecurity when we have just seen it as an aside, but it means that a lot of unsolved issues, not in American only, but even in related to American relationship to other conflicts around the world.
You heard from James Mandinyu, a Mombasa resident, and Hamisa Zaja, who is a Mombasa community leader. An assassination attempt against former U.S. President Donald Trump has sparked a wave of reactions from across the globe. As news of the incident broke, voices from Africa offered diverse perspectives on yesterday's events from South Africa. You hear first from Martin Slabbert, news anchor with Cape Talk and 702, followed by Sarah Jane Makwala King, talk show host at Cape Talk Radio. We then conclude with Malikaya Zagana, ENW News reporter.
When I walked into the studio and to the newsroom this morning and I saw what happened, I honestly didn't think that this kind of violence still happened in 2024. The last time that America had this kind of a shooting was in early 1980s, when there was an attempt on the life of the former president, Ronald Reagan. I was deeply shocked. I was saddened. I'm happy that he wasn't killed, that he was treated afterwards. I think it's unfortunately a sad indication of the level of toxicity that is in the political environment in America at the moment. I hope that calm heads will prevail, that this kind of violence should come to an end, the situation in the environment that leads to these kind of things should be nipped in the bud immediately, that political differences cannot be solved through violence and through guns.
I think that the optics now of this means that, particularly in light of President Biden and his what appears to be his deteriorating health, and certainly some questionable comments and gaffes that he's made in the past week, in the past few weeks. The optics are now, of course, that Trump looks like the hero, right? He's the guy that survived a shot to the head. So that'll be very interesting to see how that impacts how both of the presidential candidates are viewed. Of course, the conspiracy theories are going to start coming out. Did he? Was this something that was planned? I don't imagine that it was, but of course we do like to speculate, don't we? And then I suppose the other thing would be around people saying, well, now he's got a taste of his own medicine in terms of gun laws.
Well, I think it's actually a blunder from a Secret Service security detail. I think that's something that should have been avoided because we are America is heading to elections now. So things like that should be expected by the security detail of a former president. I think that Trump needs to strengthen his security around him. I think it was just an unfortunate incident that should not have happened. So.
For reaction from Nigeria, you hear from Emeka Friday from Abia State and Chimaobi Gabriel.
The attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump has shown that democracy in USA has fallen short of its glory, unlike before. It shows that democracy is not an easy system of government to be practiced.
Please, the attempted murder is a barbaric act, and I don't support it. I just watched the video, and I don't like that. How can the whole America be doing all those things? What can we, the Africans, or the residents of the Africans, or the indigenous people of the Africans, continue to be doing? I condemn the barbaric act of the Americans on that innocent man. No matter he said that he hates Africans, but I don't care. I, Emeka Friday, Ebo, from eastern part of.
Leonard Anyogo is a Nigerian constitutional lawyer and a political analyst. He condemned the assassination attempt on the former president.
Well, it's a bit of concern to Nigerians and I could say the African continent. We look up to the United States as a beacon of security, beacon of hope, beacon of democracy. But the event over time, even right from Donald Trump's candidacy, his words, his choice of words, how he described the protests that happened in Washington D.C. when he didn't concede to his defeat to Joe Biden the last 2020 elections. You know, so some feel that he was not able to condemn those actions, the protests, and all that, but for people to react the way they have reacted in terms of condemnation shows that the global community love peace, love security, and sees America as such. But two, some of his critics said he has not really condemned violence. So that's on the extreme. But generally speaking, we felt that maybe the security was not adequate because we felt that kind of rally, people should be checked and all that. You know, we've not heard that for a very long time, apart from the last assassination of the last U.S. president.
In modern times, we've not seen a top U.S. official, such as a former president, being attacked like that, and that he survived this attempt in itself is worrying, and that is why you see and hear people condemning it as unacceptable.
Yes, I agree with you totally. It's totally condemnable. Because in modern times, just like I said, we see the U.S. as beacon of hope in terms of security and all that, intelligence gathering and all that. But while we condemn it, let us look at also the history of gun violence in America generally. Because we in Africa here, we have a lot of restriction in acquiring gun, in terms of how you can acquire gun. But I don't think that is the case in the U.S. So while condemning it, we should also look at ways of preventing such. That kind of crash should be screened and all that, should be searched thoroughly. So, but while we condemn this attempt, let us also call for Donald Trump to also condemn violence. This is a very serious issue.
The former president is calling for unity, following the call that he had with President Joe Biden about, you know, the assassination attempt. People are saying this is the time for the sometimes sharp campaign rhetoric to be reduced in order to reduce political tension. What are your thoughts?
Exactly. I agree totally. Well, I believe this should be a turning point, that the campaign should not be with that violent tone. Should be, you know, just we are looking for votes. The effect of how we campaign about it. We're talking about U.S. here. U.S. is the beacon of democracy globally. So the West, the choice of West during the campaign rally, how you address your opponent, you should stay on the issue rather than attacking persons. Those are very sensitive issues. So I will see this as should be a turning point. You know, I must also commend the U.S. President Joe Biden, the way he reacted to it. And so we look up to a more refined tone in terms of campaigns going forward.
Leonard Anyaugo is a Nigerian constitutional lawyer and a political analyst. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The U.S. Republican Party is expected to formally nominate Donald Trump for president this week, days after he survived an assassination attempt at a political rally. Already, tight security is expected to be heightened in Milwaukee, which is hosting the Republican National Convention. VOA's George Agobian and William Gallo spoke with convention delegates and Milwaukee residents who are concerned about the possibility of more unrest.
One of the most serious acts of U.S. political violence in decades. Former President Donald Trump shot in the ear during a Pennsylvania rally. FBI officials call it an assassination attempt, saying the suspect is a 20-year-old Pennsylvania man named Matthew Crooks. Kevin Rojek is an FBI special agent.
We do not currently have an identified motive, although our investigators are working tirelessly to attempt to identify what that motive was.
Attention now shifts to Milwaukee, where Trump will be nominated as his party's presidential nominee this week. The already tight security has been massively expanded ahead of Trump's arrival. VOA spoke with residents who say they are worried. James Hauser is a Milwaukee resident.
I think it's going to get worse than it is now. I mean, they're shutting down streets every hour. I mean, I don't know what they're going to... When he gets here, everything's going to be shut down, I'm afraid.
Laura Bagert is an alternate Trump delegate from Tennessee.
I expect it to be safe, but you just never know. I mean, who would have thought all the rallies and all the places that President Trump has been since he came down that escalator in 2015? And it's scary. I mean, you think about it, it was a headshot.
U.S. political conventions, held every 4 years, are a chance to excite each party's base before presidential elections. But some worry about the heated political rhetoric. Alex Gray is a former official in Trump's National Security Council.
Both sides are guilty of over-the-top rhetoric. Everyone needs to take a step back and ask themselves, what are you doing through how you conduct yourself and how you speak to advance stable and resilient democratic institutions?
Many now fear what happens next in the aftermath of Saturday's shooting. Jacob Ware is with the Council on Foreign Relations.
I have argued elsewhere that we are very likely to see political violence across the spectrum in this election cycle. Obviously, this is the most serious incident so far. But I don't think there's any reason to believe that this will be the last violence that we see.
President Joe Biden said he spoke with Trump after the shooting, saying there is no room for what he called sick political violence. Bill Gallo, VOA News.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame wrapped up his re-election campaign Saturday, 2 days before voting takes place on Monday. The incumbent faces two opponents who say he has been in office for too long. Kagame tells reporters that his supporters want him to run for another term. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
At a news conference following his last campaign rally, Rwandan President Paul Kagame told reporters that his priorities for the country he's been leading since 2000 will not change.
Priority number one after we've gone through all this is to continue to make as much progress as we can in the area of security and stability of our country, social economic development, progress, and even in our country, growing it towards prosperity.
This will be his fourth term if he wins re-election next week. Kagame faces two other candidates, including the Democratic Green Party's Frank Habineza, who ran against him in 2017 and says the president has stayed around for way too long. Habineza told VOA he successfully campaigned in most of the 30 districts across the country recently, and voters have been more enthusiastic this time around.
I'm giving them hope that at least after the 30 years, we need something different. We need to see a different way of living, a different political program, a different thinking, a different vision. We are not going to destroy the good things that have been done, but we want to give them better, a better hope, a better future.
Kagame joked at the news conference that he never wanted to be president, saying that it was his party that insisted he get into the race in 2000. Decades later, his supporters tell him they want him to run for another term.
Every day we ask, when are you leaving? How much work? So, you know, these people who made me president are telling me they still want me to be president. Somebody somewhere says, no, you are here too long. So now I really get confused, and I think this is not fair.
The 66-year-old leader is expected to cruise to an easy victory. One reason, according to critics, is that he has stifled dissent. But another, analysts say, is the way he's been able to guide the East African country toward internal peace since the 1994 genocide, when an estimated 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus were killed by Hutu extremists. Eric Dushabandi is a political science and international relations professor at the University of Rwanda and an associate researcher at the Louvain University in Brussels. He says Kagame's support has been there because of his efforts to address Rwandans' need for stability after the genocide.
The language and practice and success around stabilization and security, mainly internal politics, I think it is joining the expectation and aspiration of many Rwandans after this tragic and historical background.
Dushabandi also says there is a big gap between the presidential candidates in terms of popularity, ideology, means, and capacity. Other candidates were barred from the race by the National Electoral Commission for various reasons. One was a fierce Kagame critic, Diane Ruigara, who the commission said did not provide a criminal record statement and did not collect the minimum number of supporters' signatures. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Kigali, in Rwanda.
Frank Habineza, the presidential candidate of Rwanda's main opposition Democratic Green Party, says he will win Monday's presidential election. His announcement comes after he wrapped up his campaign ahead of the poll. The opposition leader faces independent candidate Philippe Mpayimana and the popular incumbent President Paul Kagame from the governing Rwandan Patriotic Front, or RPF, in the presidential contest. Political analysts say Habineza has no chance of defeating the president due to the dominance of Kagame and the ruling RPF. For more about his electoral prospect ahead of Monday's vote, I reach Frank Habineza.
We have covered the whole country campaigning, all the 30 districts in Rwanda. It has been quite a hard work because we've had to do all that in a few 22 days. So we've had to do 2 districts per day. So it's been quite a difficult journey, but finally we have finalized that and we have had a good achievement. I mean, we've seen people welcoming us in different parts of the country, and we've been seeing people lining up on the street, coming out of their houses, coming out of their shops, welcoming us, and even some of them dancing for us, and some of them gifting us, and also our lorries. We've had some big lorries for over 50,000 people, and those people just come to see us. So it's been quite amazing. So of course, there have been some few challenges here and there, but overall, it has been quite wonderful. So I'm very hopeful of getting a very good result today. The elections.
You talked about people coming out in their numbers. You talked about 50,000 people coming to your rallies. But how willing are these people to vote for you on Monday?
People have been telling me physically and even whispering in my ears that we'll vote for you, and saying it, even giving me the sign that they'll vote for me wherever I have passed. And I know that there are others I've not been able to reach out, but I hear comments from here and there. People are very supportive of our manifesto. Because, you know, this is the third time we're coming to elections. The last time we were in elections was for the parliamentary elections, where we won seats to enter parliament. And when I was a parliamentarian, we did a lot of work for the people of Rwanda, and we have got a lot of achievements registered. People saw that we are a real party, which stands up for them, which stands up for their social issues, for their economic issues. So people are very happy because I have key achievements that I've done for them, and the promises I'm giving them, the tangible promises. So I'm hopeful that what they are telling me will also be reflected in the votes.
But Frank, videos and pictures we have seen show that your rallies are smaller to that of the ruling party. And because of the ruling party's dominance, political analysts are saying they don't see you having any competition with the ruling party and by extension incumbent president, because he's so popular. How well do you think you can do against him?
For us, you know, the ruling party has a coalition of 9 political parties, and all of them are governing parties, all of them. So we are the only political party in Rwanda which has stood out and said that we are going to challenge the ruling coalition. So because of that, and because of our track record, people are so hopeful, see hope in us, because I am the hope of the people of Rwanda. I'm the light and also the solution. So I'm proposing them tangible solutions, and I'm showing them the way. And they know that I've done this before, that I'm not lying to them. We are a party that does not lie to people. We are a party that achieves. So, yes, the president, Kagame, rallies have been big. And he has a big machinery with all the local structures, but also have our own local structures. We are the second political party in Rwanda, in influence. We have political structures of the youth and the women structures from the district level, provincial level, even national level. So we are second in command, and because of that, people have been giving a lot of hope to me, and I'm giving them hope to them, and they are assuring me that they will vote for me, at least we believe that by over 55% we shall win the election.
What are the two main issues that you are using to convince the people to vote for you on Monday?
I've put the justice sector as number one priority, because I'm going to scrap or remove all the legal detention centers in Rwanda, which they call transit centers, where they put people, young people in prison there without legal discourse and all due process of the law. So these transit centers, where they take people, they feed them once a day, and sometimes they are not properly treated. So we're going to scrap them or remove them in the whole country, because they imprison people illegally. We only accept the Rwanda Investigation Bureau to arrest people, but not those ones. So people are so happy with that. But that's not only about justice. We've also talked about the economy. We're going to improve the livelihoods of the people of Rwanda, because we have an unemployment rate at 25%. So we're going to establish agro-processing industries in every sector. That's a second administrative organ in Rwanda. And also going to establish up vocational training colleges in every sector, where people can train on what they need, and also process their food, whatever their products, and give them value addition. And also about mining, also we're going to establish a mining processing plant. So because in Rwanda, we must make sure that any mineral that will come out of Rwanda will have a value addition. We shall process it first before we send them as raw materials. So all these things are going to create a lot of employment in Rwandan people. And people are so happy that we are solving their problems, so problems of injustice, but also about food. We have issues of food security, food in Rwanda, because we're dependent on the food imports from Bangladesh, from India, from Tanzania and elsewhere. So we're going to make sure that we establish an agriculture development support fund, which will give soft loans to farmers at an interest rate of less than 2%.
Frank Habineza is the presidential candidate of Rwanda's main opposition Democratic Green Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Kigali. Sierra Leone's First Lady is an enthusiastic supporter of the new law banning child marriage in the West African country. Mrs. Fatima Madabio says the Prohibition of Child Marriage Act will ensure the protection of girls and stiffly punish those who engage in marrying girls who are under 18 years old. Her remarks come after President Julius Madabio signed the law, which enjoys overwhelming support from both the ruling party and the opposition in parliament. The new law imposes a 15-year jail term or $4,000 fine or both to anybody found guilty of engaging in early child marriage. In an exclusive interview with VOA via video link, the Sierra Leonean First Lady, who backs a campaign against sexual abuse she calls Hands Off Our Girls, says the new law is a personal victory for women. Here is the conclusion of the conversation.
What do you say to those who are saying that the law basically prevents the tradition that has kept Sierra Leone for a long time, and that you and your husband are trying to usurp the traditional belief system of Sierra Leoneans, the religious systems of Sierra Leone, because this has been acceptable for a long time? What do you tell them when they accuse you of with such criticism?
This has been acceptable for a long time. That is why Sierra Leone is where Sierra Leone is. So we need to change that narrative. And changing that narrative for the greater good for a nation should supersede what tradition says. What we're doing is not only empowering or saving the lives of young girls, but you are also giving them the opportunity to be educated. And when they are educated, they will be able to serve a nation and contribute to nation building. So I'm really not worried about what, and you know what? Anybody who is a citizen of that country that wants our country to go forward and to be developed and to be a progressive country would want every child to be in school, not to be in a matrimonial home. And if you look at the rate of death in our hospitals, the number of young girls that are in the hospital due to pregnancy, because when you are definitely married to a man, you are expected to have sex with that man. And when you do, you are also expected to be pregnant. Most of these children are so young, their bodies are not ready. And when it's time for them to deliver, they're not able to. Eventually, you lost the child and then the child lost her own child. So it's like it's a loss to the nation. You're losing two children because of what? Because some pervert want to have sex with a kid? That should not be my problem.
So when we meet some of these young women and girls, and I've seen you meet some of them, what is the message to them, especially after the president signed this measure into law?
You know, I have a very good relationship with the young girls of our country. And I mean, I'm very much grateful because when they call themselves Fatima's children, that means that the Hands Off Our Girls resonates to them. Now, when you want to chase a girl or you want to date a girl, they themselves will want you to know what's their age. So they will tell you, I am Fatima's child. That is to tell you they are under 18 and it's a no-go area. So they themselves are part of the campaign. They're helping with the campaign and they're helping with the implementation of the campaign. The relationship I've built with these girls is one of trust and one of equal. And they feel safe with me. They believe that whatever I'm saying to them, I am saying it for their own good, not for my own personal gain. I don't hold a government position. I am not an elected member. I am just a wife of a president. So that gives me an opportunity to be, you know, as an outsider and speak the truth, speak truth to power, and also talk to the nation so that they understand what is our problem. And they don't see me as the problem, but they see me as a solution.
Sometimes enforcement of the law becomes a challenge in a lot of African countries, especially in the rural areas and among family members, because some of these practices have been going on for a long time. How do you see the implementation of this law after the president signed it into the measure into law?
I want you to ask me this question, in 6 months' time, because I'm going to go back to the people. I'm going to go back and explain to them why we needed this law, why it has to be this effective, you know, it is not for me, it is for them, it is for their children. And I believe that there are so many mothers in that country today that are celebrating this law, because no woman would want to see their child being shipped off into marriage. No woman would want to, you know, your child become a bride within a year, your child become a diseased person. No woman would want that. So I know I have the support of the mothers. By extension, I will have the support of the fathers, because the mothers are the ones who share the same room with the fathers, and they will have the time to talk to their husbands and let them see sense that whatever we're doing is not for politics. If it was politics, we'll just put the law in one side of the country and say, this is a law for the Southeast, or this is the law for the North. But no, this is a law for every child in Sierra Leone, whether you are SLPP, whether you are APC, it doesn't matter. It is for the nation, and it will improve the lives of our children. It will also protect them. It will empower them. It will give them the space to grow, for them to be a child when it is necessary. And when they are grown enough as a woman, they would also behave like a woman. But you cannot force a child to be a woman when they are children. That's not possible.
Now, you were quoted as saying that this is a personal battle or a personal victory for you. What did you mean by that?
It's a personal journey for me, because, you know, I mean, I believe you know this. I was married off when I was 12 years old. So I'm not speaking from somebody else's hymn sheet. I'm speaking from my own experience. I know how frightening that is. I know how terrifying. I know how it kills a child's dream. I know how a child will just say, you know what, why would I even bother to go to school? What's the point of me wasting my time when I already know what my fate is? So you don't plan, you don't dream, you don't wish for anything. In fact, in your quiet time, the only thing you wish for is for God to just take you, so that you're not part of this world. Why would a child who is supposed to be somebody in a society now be wishing to die just because another person is making a decision on their lives? I know that feeling. I was once in that situation, and I don't wish that even for my enemy. So I will not sit when God has blessed me with this opportunity where I am today and not use this opportunity to change the lives of our children.
Mrs. Fatima Madabio is Sierra Leone's First Lady. She spoke with me from New York. The national spokesperson for Uganda's opposition party, the National Unity Platform, or NUP, says the authorities have not yet approved the venue it plans to use to mark 4 years of its formation. Alex Waiswa also says the capital, Kampala, should be ready for a sea of people who will throng to the city to celebrate the milestone. The NUP plans to use the Kololo Independence Ground to mark its celebration. This after officially requesting permission for its use from the permanent secretary at the Ministry of Defense and Veterans Affairs. For more information about plans to celebrate its fourth anniversary, I reached the NUP spokesperson, Alex Waiswa.
The National Unity Platform, as the world may realize, is the youngest and fastest growing party in the world. And on the 22nd of July, we will have met our 4 years of existence. And our existence is not one that can be taken under the carpet, because it has been faced with brutality, arrest of our members, murder of our members. And of course, you know, the National Unity Platform experienced the bloodiest militaristic election Uganda has ever faced. So it is important that with the milestone of that growth, stabilizing the politics of the region, especially the country, where the politics now of the country is stabilized and people have been given a foundation of understanding their role in delivering change, it is important that Ugandans celebrate the coming, but also the long existence of the National Unity Platform.
So tell me, one of the news organizations or media houses in Uganda described your application to use the Kololo Independence Ground as an audacious request.
Well, it is, first of all, Kololo Airs, Kololo Independent Ground. Those are grounds of Ugandans. They are public grounds. Nobody owns them. Therefore, anybody should be able to access them. Hihato, these grounds were the task public space, and as such, it must be accessed by all political players. So we are only doing a right that we think we have as Ugandans to go and occupy premises that are domiciled in our nation.
I understand you are organizing this celebration or marking this milestone with a theme or under the theme 4 years of NUP, the milestones reached, the obstacles encountered, and a glance into the future. Some people are saying that this is provocative enough and that this is another attempt that you want to poke your hand basically at the bear's eye, they said. Your response to that?
Of course, those who are saying that are speaking out of naivety, not understanding that the grounds are not for an individual. Definitely something that has existed for 4 years will face challenges, but then we'll have a prognosis of the future, and that is what we are saying. I know that it is hard. It is a hard stall to take on because we are in a dictatorship. That is why even the able minds will think that a political party constitutionally mandated to run affairs of leadership in the country, again, is not mandated to seek to use premises that are constitutionally owned by citizenry. Then that will be a joke of a nation.
Some critics have said that the Kololo, some observers have said the Kololo ground, independent ceremonial, Kololo independence ground, used to be a no-go area for opposition groups. The Democratic Party tried to use it. It wasn't approved. Chisabeseje from the FDC tried to use it. Sometimes it was approved, sometimes not. Have you received any approval for the use of the grounds?
From the onset, I want to state that the persons in charge of Kololo ought to understand that that's not a private property, that is a public property. Therefore, any Ugandan who seeks to use it to their advantage must be given accessibility. You know that that place has been used for different concerts. You've seen Genome 7 himself using it to the advantage of the NRA. Now, it is important that all other entities should be given access and abilities to access, to have the premises to their chagrin. However, we have not yet got any approvals as yet, but we expect that should not be a problem to them.
What should be the expectations of Ugandans who will be observing the marking of NUP's formation on July 22nd?
You see the numbers. We are people power. And it is one of the places that has enough surface to host our people. I can tell you, Kampala will be locked down by masses of people.
Alex Waiswai is the national spokesperson for Uganda's opposition party, the National Unity Platform, or NUP. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema promises to reach out to his predecessor for peace talks to help ease political tensions in the country. Speaking to religious groups, the president said he has heard the advice of the church, which supports his decision. The church and civil society groups have repeatedly called for peace between the current and former president. This after expressing concern that heightened tensions could plunge the country into violence. By reacting to the president's olive branch gesture, Raphael Nakachinda, the general secretary of the main opposition party, the Patriotic Front, or PF, tells me that Hichilema's pledge to reach out to former President Lungu for peace talks is not convincing.
First of all, it's important to acknowledge that it wasn't a voluntary statement from a place of him, appreciating that for him to manage the affairs of this country, to guarantee peace, and also for him to be able to draw lessons on how certain things can be handled to have a different, outcome. may require him consulting his predecessor. It was an advice given from the church. But we have also witnessed in the past 3 years of his presidency statements alleging that he has been in contact or intends to be in contact with the former president.
But if he has made the admission that I have heard the call from the church to reach out to the former president to smoke the peace pipe to ease political tensions in the country, shouldn't the PF take this as an olive branch measure to engage the president to ease political tension in Zambia?
We can never trust that. That so-called olive branch could be a poisoned olive branch because it may not be coming in good faith.
But saying that, don't you think that there is need to reduce the increasing political tension in Zambia? Because the church acknowledges it, civil society groups acknowledge it, and that is why they are calling on both leaders to try to find some common ground so there is no politically related violence as a result of the tensions?
There must be, first of all, genuine acceptance of the situation on the ground. There must also be genuine acceptance and from a place of humility that there is need to engage stakeholders, including, in this case, the leader of Patriotic Front, who happens to be the former president. As Patriotic Front, we know clearly what is the cause of the tension in the nation. The cause of the tension in the nation is the mismanagement of the affairs of the republic, the high cost of living, the lack of adherence to the rule of law, the police brutality, the abuse of human rights. I mean, the list is endless. And if the president is to engage anybody, including the former president, president and the UPND must be committed genuinely, willing genuinely to address these issues if we are to sort out the issue of tension in the nation. It cannot just be playing to the gallery and do some PR that they come and shake hands, have tea, and not deal with the fundamental issues. It means that we're just playing a game and playing with the lives of the Zambian people.
What do you say to critics who are of the view that the recent statement that no President Lungu in the next presidential election means the election will not hold? Some of your critics are saying such statement basically undermines the rule of law. If a court of competent jurisdiction makes a pronouncement or makes a judgment, and you making such a statement, basically you want the tensions to fester. You want to create anarchy. You want to create chaos in the country.
It is a statement demanding for the right thing to be done from the judiciary. In this case, the Concord has addressed itself to the questions before it more than 3-4 times, and it's a final court of jurisdiction. I don't want to delve into matters that are already in court, but I think the principle that must be appreciated is that there must be finality to litigation. The moment we are going to have the court make decisions depending on who is in government, you are actually saying that there is no rule of law in this country, and the institution that is expected to dispense justice in the Republic of Zambia has abrogated its responsibility, and therefore no one is safe. It's not the call for purely just that Edgar Lungu should be on a ballot at all cost. It is basically a call that, knowing that he's eligible and legitimately so declared by the law, not only now but 3-4 times in time past, anything moving forward that disfranchises him as a person and disfranchises the party to present a flag bearer that we believe is the best to be able to save this country and, guarantee progress in itself, is a way of putting everybody on alert that we shouldn't allow that the judiciary is bastardized, the judiciary is compromised because of the clear pressure and attempts by the executive to meddle into the affairs of the judiciary.
Raphael Nakachinda is the General Secretary of the main opposition party, the Patriotic Front, or PF. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. ¶¶ This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, music from African Collection. But first.
This shape, out of back technique.
And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect a flashback with music from the continent.
for me no sabi swim, but sabi kill me go.
Sewa, sewa, me no sabi swim, but sabi kill me go.
Sewa, 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 go river, sewa, for me no sabi swim, but sabi kill me go now.
Sewa, sewa, me no sabi swim, but sabi kill me go.
No sabi swim,
but sabi kill me go.
No sabi swim,
but sabi kill me go.
No sabi swim,
but sabi kill me go.
No sabi swim,
but sabi kill me go.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, you cannot climb the ladder of success with your hands in your pocket. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Yeah, 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 yeah.